Okay.
I think it's Darters.
Okay.
Okay.
You know what, Josh, if it doesn't work, apparently I'm giving the same shear tomorrow night instead of Rev Daniel. He asked me today if I wanted to do it again. So I guess we have another chance if it doesn't work tonight. Okay.
Did you hear that, Lisa? He's giving the shear tomorrow.
Yeah, that was like a last minute, a couple hours ago. Rev Daniel emailed me and said, I heard you're giving a shear for women tonight. You want to give the same shear again tomorrow night for the men? I said, I'm happy to if you want me to, but I don't need to take over your shear, you know? I'll send you my notes if you want, but he said, no, he wanted me to do it. So if you missed it, I'm going to try to record both. But if for some reason it doesn't work tonight, so hopefully tomorrow. Okay, yeah, it's going, hopefully. Okay, first, thank you to the Dorviches for having us here, and thank you for all of you for coming. And I guess the fact that you attend the shiur about the 3 weeks and the 9 days shows that it's something which is important to you. And that's the first step for all of this, which I'll come back to at the end. We'll spend a couple of minutes at the end. All right, I'm not going to give you all the jokes now about how the rabbis decide the halacha. I'll do my best to give you all the things that are permissible that I'm able to. For a lot of things, yeah. Are you Sephardic?
No.
You could be. That I'm not going to tell you. That I can't say. Sorry. Okay, so the main part of the shiur tonight is going to be talking about the different halachos that are relevant for the 3 weeks and the 9 days. We'll do mostly for Ashkenazim, but we'll try to throw in some of the Sephardi Piskei Halacha as well. Yeah, just so you're aware of the reason. No. There are two ways you can look at it. We'll talk about it at the end for a couple minutes. You know, it's one way of looking at halacha is that halacha is a system of restrictions of telling you all the things that you can't do. And the other way of looking at it, which I think is the correct way, is that halacha is not meant to tell you all the things that you cannot do for no reason. You know, the point of the halacha is to get you into a system of feeling. Halacha is not just about, you know, do's and don'ts. Halacha is to try to give you a state of mind. And part of the state of mind that we're trying to get here, which again we'll come back to at the end for a little bit, is the idea of mourning, of avelos over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And all the halachos that we're going to see, and you're probably familiar with already, are basically designed to get you into the right frame of mind so that you feel that you're a little bit sad, that something is missing. And we don't always feel it today. And we'll come back to this at the very end. But just at the beginning, it's already important to keep that in mind, that we're not just randomly throwing out, you know, prohibitions here, things to make your life difficult during this time of year, especially when the 9 days come even more so. It's really about trying to create a certain frame of reference and an understanding and appreciation that something is different now. And we have to sort of understand what that is and why that is. And if it bothers us, that's a good thing, meaning it should bother us. But in the end, what we want to happen is that it's not that the fact that we can't do something, that there are prohibitions bothers us. It's the fact of the reason for the prohibitions that should bother us. The fact that we're missing the temple and everything that the Beis HaMikdash represents is what really this is supposed to be about. So we'll come back to that at the end. That was just, you know, a 2 minute introduction. That being said, so basically we have two categories of halacha here. We have one again for the 3 weeks and one for the 9 days. So we'll spend a couple minutes talking about the 3 weeks. More of the halachos are relevant to the 9 days than three weeks, but we'll obviously go in order. So let's start with the 3 weeks. Okay, so the 3 weeks, of course, we know started a couple days ago on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. This year, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz was on Sunday, though again, we're giving this year now, so it's not relevant anymore. But this year, because the 17th of Tammuz was actually on Shabbos, so the restrictions actually started already in Motzei Shabbos on Saturday night. Again, every other year, there's a bit of a question about how that works, but this year, everybody would agree that in terms of, let's say, some of the haircuts and music and stuff like that and weddings, everybody would agree that the Motzei Shabbos this year was not allowed. Other years, it's a machlokas, which we're not going to get into now. But that's basically when the time period begins. We know the Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Anybody remember what the reason why we fast on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is? There's a few reasons, but specifically in terms of the destruction of the temple. Anybody remember what happened during the destruction? Exactly, right. Very good. Okay, so again, there were different dates for the two temples, but at least for one of them, so Shiva Asar B'Tammuz was the day that the walls were breached, of course, which was the beginning of the end. That's the period. Once they're in Yerushalayim, once they got in, so then already, you know, the end is already in sight. It's not that much longer before the temple goes up in flames, which is, of course, on Tisha B'Av. So there are a couple restrictions that are relevant during the 3 weeks. Number one, again, I'll just preface all this by saying that much of this will probably be a review for you, but hopefully you know, it's always good to review, and it's also an opportunity to sort of raise, you know, either more questions or other details that you may not have been familiar with, or applications that you may not have thought about that may be relevant, and you may just have, oh, wait a second, that's a good point, I never thought of that. The first one is very, very straightforward, and that's, of course, that there's no weddings, okay? This is mainly for Ashkenazim, though I think the rule in Israel here today, I think the modern rule in Israel is that that nobody has weddings. I think the rabbinate doesn't do weddings during the 3 weeks anymore. But the main rule is for Ashkenazim, we don't get married. Engagements is permissible. Okay, again, I think everybody here is past this stage already, but I'm sure you have other relatives or friends or whatever. If it's relevant, so again, an engagement party and even a meal, a suda of some sort, is permissible during the 3 weeks. The only thing that you can't do, which we'll discuss shortly, is dancing. Okay. And maybe live music, which we'll talk about, or maybe even recorded music. But in terms of engagement parties, that's permissible. Again, but no weddings. Okay, that's the rule for Ashkenazim and the general rule in Israel. Okay. Number two, I assume there's no questions on that one, right?
I have a quick question.
Okay.
For Sfaradim, is it different?
Yeah, so for Sfaradim, in theory, it would be permissible to get married.
I was asking because we've been looking for a DJ, and he said, come and listen to me. I think this coming Tuesday, whatever. He's Fodi.
Okay. Where is he playing?
I have no idea. He's going to get back to me. I'm assuming in Ashdod somewhere. That's
okay. So is it a wedding or?
No, bar mitzvah.
Okay, yeah. So that's going to be different.
Meaning, it'll be DJ. It's not going to be live music, but it just fascinates me.
Right. It's very interesting. So we'll have to, we'll get to that, okay? If I don't mention that particular type of point, then I'll please. On the Shavuos or the Tammuz, on the fast day, they definitely fast.
The
for sure. Everybody fasts on Shavuos Tammuz, unless you're exempt.
Why is it that this fast is like from sunrise to sunset, where Tisha B'Av is 24-25?
Okay, so that's only because Tisha B'Av is considered to be more severe, meaning because it was the day that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So we treat it as a much more severe occurrence than Shavuos or the Tammuz, which is sort of, you know, what leads up to that.
You know, this is the best
Tahar Torah
fast
in Abu,
because it's
really
today.
Yeah, right.
And you can fast
like
from
6 to
1.
I was
going to
say, yeah.
Shot into Israel.
This must be rough for you this time of year to fast when it's so hot outside.
Never mind, Tisha B'Av is also 25 hours.
Right, right, that's true.
How we sleep long.
But it's true, but still, it's so hot here. It's so hot, it's hard. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, again, not for now, just to throw this out. Maybe we'll have another shiur before Tisha B'Av if anybody wants to. If not, just to throw this out, that for Tisha B'Av, there actually was a custom of some people in Israel that that some women didn't fast on Tisha B'Av just because it was too hard for them. So again, without getting into this now, that's not the regular halacha.
Not pregnant, not ill, just...
Because it's so hot. Well, so again, I'm not saying we should follow this, but just be aware there is such a thing.
One of my neighbors in Melbourne was Egyptian. From Egypt, and she said that in Egypt, in Alexandria, they only
bound
Tishba, then
we fasted
till 2 in the
morning. So interesting. It's probably so hot. So I'll tell you, this is what I was going to say.
She was a religious lady.
Right.
Yeah?
My parenthetic comment to that is that I suspect that was true. Maybe it's still true today to a lesser degree. I suspect that was true mainly before they had air conditioning. Mm. If you don't have air conditioning and you're even in a house with fans and it's 95 degrees outside or 35 degrees Celsius, whatever Celsius is, you know, you can't do it. It's so hard to not drink water all day, especially for 25 hours.
Children running around.
Yeah, it's really, really hard. So today it's also hard. But today, at least if you have air conditioning, so at least you can get by and it's cool inside and it's not the same thing as when you don't. So I have a feeling that's where that custom came from, the fact they didn't have air conditioning. And today, you know, there are some still, the rabbanim is still allowed, but in general, it's not the first choice, meaning usually we say today that you should try to fast, even, you know, anybody. And that's probably why, because today you could just turn on the air conditioning full blast. You still have kids running around if you have children to take care of, but at least the weather is, you know, something which is a little bit more controllable. And again, it's just food for thought to throw out there. Okay, so in terms of weddings, again, Sfaradim in theory can have weddings during the 3 weeks, but in practice, generally, at least in this country, they generally do not. Again, in terms of music and bar mitzvahs, we'll talk about that in a little bit. If I forget, please let me know. Okay, in terms of haircuts, so another restriction for Ashkenazim is that the custom is for Ashkenazim that we don't take haircuts during the 3 weeks. So
Erev Rosh Chodesh?
Yeah, so basically the idea of haircuts is that the entire 3 weeks is included. Okay, meaning there's basically no restrictions on no exceptions to the rule about haircuts in general, with a couple of exceptions. Meaning there's no day that are exempted from the rule. But in terms of specific cases, there's a couple cases that some of the posts are willing to be lenient about when necessary. Okay, I'll tell you what some of them are here. Number one, come up here first. Was that?
I'm guessing for a breast.
Yeah, okay, so that's one of the cases. For people that are, you know, a father, we'll talk about males for now, we'll talk about females in a second. For a father or for a mohel who feels the need to shave, haircuts is a bit of a question, but certainly for shaving is generally permissible before bris. Shaving general, we're not going to go into now just because this shears for females, so
women,
I can skip shaving. But what is that?
Women shaving.
Okay, so that's the only question I guess we would discuss. I saw in a number of the Sfarim in the sefer called the Piskei Tshuvos, which you may have heard of. It's a nice sefer with a lot of practical halacha. So he quoted a number of poskim, including, I forgot who, but he quoted a number of poskim that if it's done for reasons of tznius, okay, meaning shaving legs or other cases which are generally accepted for women to do because, again, however you want to describe it, but the word they used was tznius reasons. You can use a different word if you like. So they felt that it might be permissible. Okay, so hair, I think, in general, would not be allowed. Okay, but other parts of the body, for reasons that have to do with tznius or some form of that, so that would be permissible. Okay, that's what the Piskei Tshuvos wants to say. There may have been some that forbade it, but it seems like the general custom is to allow it if you feel that it's necessary. I found also, again, this is not for our stage of life at this point, but for those, if you know anybody, very interesting. I found that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach apparently felt that at least for women, if a woman needed to get a haircut because she was going on a date, meaning she's not married, if she's going out on a date, so he felt that maybe that was permissible. Again, it depends on the situation. If she doesn't need a haircut, there's no reason to get a haircut. But if it's something that would be felt that was necessary or important, so at least, maybe not for men, but at least for women, Rav Shlomo Zalman apparently felt that maybe there was...
First 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, during the 9 days, it's more correct. During the 9 days, it's more strict. But certainly during the 3 weeks, there is room to allow that. Let's get to some more practical points for us now, those of us who have children that this is relevant for. So in terms of children, in general, the halacha is, this is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, at least for the period before Tisha B'Av, but it's accepted for Ashkenazim as well, during the 3 weeks, that children in general should not get haircuts either. Meaning it's not just for people over bar bat mitzvah, it's also for children that are under bat mitzvah. And what that means is that an adult shouldn't be cutting their hair either. And you can't say, well, they shouldn't get a haircut, but I can cut their hair. That's not how it works, okay? The Shulchan Aruch says clearly during the period before Tisha B'Av, and again, our extension for Ashkenazim during the 3 weeks, is that would be forbidden for an adult to cut a child's hair as well. Okay, again, for the 9 days and that whole situation, we'll come back to in a few minutes. But certainly for Ashkenazim, 3 weeks is generally not allowed. Basically, the one exception I found for cutting hair, which is unfortunately has been practical in the past for us and maybe for others as well. Somebody asked me this question, I think, last year. Let's say your kid has lice. Okay, you never thought of this one, right? And guess what? If you don't remember, if you do remember, that sometimes when a child has lice and you want to shampoo them and do the whole thing, so sometimes cutting their hair first can be very, very helpful in getting the lice out because there's so much less that you have to do, right? Yeah. So that's the question. So is it permissible to cut your hair or cut a child's hair in order to take care of lice? So I found in one of the Sfarim called the Nitei Gavriel, Rav Gavriel Zinner, who's a Rav in Brooklyn. He has a whole series of Sfarim. He's a Hasidish Rav, but a very, very well-known set of Sfarim. So I actually have the Sefer at home. So I found that he actually talks about it, even though he's from America, and in America there's not as much of a problem of lice. Maybe it's worse there, because when you get it there, you're really in trouble. Yeah, okay, everybody has lice in America. Oh my gosh, you have lice. I don't know what it's like and where you come from, but in America, they go crazy.
You can't go to school.
Yeah.
You can't go to school. You have to bring a
nail.
Yeah,
so
and this bottle, you have holidays.
Right.
Usually, you know, like at school, you catch a
problem. It's true. It's true. But in Chutzlar, it's less... Right, exactly. So it happens, but it's much less common. When it happens, they'll quarantine you for a week, you know. In Israel, okay, fine, you have lice. Whatever, yeah. Everyone else has it too, you know. But again, either way, I think that, you know, his psak was basically that it would be permissible to cut your hair, cut a child's hair if they have lice, if you feel that that's helpful in order to be able to get rid of the lice. The same way, as you mentioned, that during the 9 days, it's permissible, as we'll see shortly, it's permissible to wash, take a shower, or other things involving water for medical reasons, or if you're, you know, if you need to clean yourself from being dirty. Same thing here for lice, that would be permissible. Okay, so again, that's something to keep in mind if it's something that you need. That there's That's a nice tool to be aware of. Okay, shaving word to skip for this crowd. I'll talk about that tomorrow night at the men's share a little bit. Okay, next point. In terms of music, so this is a big one, all right? So what's the story in terms of music? So here, believe it or not, even though generally Sfardim, as we said, are not as stringent during the 3 weeks in terms of other aspects that we said, in terms of music, most of the Sfardim post are Machmir. Here Rav Avadia and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. He brings that here, this is paper from Rav Harari, if you've seen it, a green book called Mikrai Kodesh, very, very nice. So he brings that number of Sfardim post him also. In general, it's accepted across the board that music is not appropriate during the 3 weeks. And again, without going...
Music?
Yeah. Was there? We'll get to it. We'll get to it in a second. Give me 1 second. We'll get to it. Don't worry. Part of the reason why that is that even though you might say that music, they didn't even have like recorded music back in the days, you know, a couple hundred years ago. They didn't have such things. All they had was live music with instruments. So yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But part of the idea is that at one point, there's in the halachic system, there are discussions about whether you can listen to music all year round. And this you may not have known this either. Okay, there are many posts that actually say that really, the way the halacha should be is that you shouldn't be able to listen to music all year round. Anyone know why that is? Why that would be?
Why?
So Allison said basically, the reason why we shouldn't be happy is because of exactly this time of year, the Chol B'Mishnah Mikdash. But because there are a few sources in the Gemara which seem to say that in terms of music, that maybe you can never listen to music because we're so sad about the destruction of the B'Mishnah Mikdash. So today, all the posts can generally say that, well, our generation needs music, and music keeps you happy, and it's very important, etc., etc. So in general, we're not usually machmir, at least most of us, are not machmir on listening to music the rest of the year. But a lot of the posts can say that at least during this time of year, exactly what we said before, that this is the time of year that we're supposed to actually think about what we lost. And if the rest of the year, the reason why one might have said that you shouldn't listen to music is because of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, because we're in mourning, so certainly during the 3 weeks and during the 9 days, you should definitely be machmir for that. And that's what all the poskim say. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes this. Rav Avadia writes this. All the other poskim, they all basically say more or less the same idea. So based on that, that's why the custom for both Ashkenazim and Sephardim is to be machmir for music during the 3 weeks and the 9 days. Now, what's included in music? So here, basically, just tell you some of the points. All right, everybody agrees that live music is included. Okay, meaning live music is definitely not allowed during the 3 weeks and during the 9 days. With a couple exceptions, and I'm curious to hear where, you know, whoever mentioned about the story in Ashdod. I'll have to see in a minute what might be permissible. In general, live music is not allowed. Okay.
Are you going to a concert?
Oh, so certainly a concert would not be allowed. Okay, that's definitely not allowed. However, there is a discussion which I'm not going to get into so much now, but there is a bit of a machlokas among the poskim whether for a mitzvah, meaning a sudas mitzvah or a mitzvah type of event such as a bar mitzvah, maybe pidyon ben, though pidyon ben I don't think they usually have music, but bar mitzvah is accepted. So for bar mitzvahs, so there's machlokas, there are some poskim that allow you to have live music at a bar mitzvah because it's for a mitzvah. Okay, again, you'll find different customs among different people. I don't know if there's people in Yavid, I don't think people in Yavid Yamin have done it, at least not that I've seen, but it's definitely possible that there are some poskim that allow it, and there are other poskim that say no, even for a mitzvah like that you can sing, but you shouldn't have live music, and maybe you shouldn't even have big recorded music with music players of any sort, the keyboard or with a stereo system or anything like that. So that one would say that if that was the situation, either to have a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah party without music, or to wait till after Tisha B'Av and celebrate it the way that you want to a couple weeks later. In terms of recorded music, so recorded music, most posts can also say is a problem. Okay, meaning that even though recorded music they didn't have 200 years ago, when all the poskim were talking about this, the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan and all the others, the Prima Gadim and a lot of other poskim that talk about this question, they were generally all talking about instrumental music. They didn't have recorded music because they didn't have technology back then to do that. But today, most of the poskim say, again, the same poskim I mentioned before, of Moshe, or of Avadia, the Tzitz Eliezer, familiar with them, or of Waldenberg, and a lot of their poskim, they all say that basically recorded music is an extension of live music, meaning the same way that it's not quite as much. But recorded music also, if it's happy music and nice music, the point is that it's supposed to make you happy and it's supposed to make you excited and lively. And that's exactly what we're trying to avoid during the 3 weeks and the 9 days. We don't want to be in a state of mind that we feel everything is great, everything is wonderful. Okay? So therefore that's why most of the posts can say that's just an extension, automatic extension of the custom to avoid live music. There was a possibility, was there? Let me give you a few more details first, and then you can ask if I haven't addressed it. There was a possibility that maybe Rav Soloveitchik held that recorded music, at least in private, was not included. Okay. Like a private thing, not if you're blasting something with a CD player or something like that, or at a big event. But he felt maybe if you're listening to earphones or if it's just you in your private house, so he felt that maybe recorded music was not included. In general, the custom is not to rely on that, though again, there may be some that do, but in general, the custom is to be machmir about this, unless you have a specific reason why you need to be lenient. Okay, so hold on. So I'll give you a couple possible exceptions. Okay, number one. So in terms of musicians, there are poskim. This is based on the Prima Gadim, was one of the Achronim from a couple hundred years ago. He already said that that if you have a musician who has parnasa based on his playing, so he felt that the Prima Gadim felt that was permissible. Now you got to figure out where he's going to play. Okay, if nobody wants him to play, he can't play. But if there are places that he could play, so if that's the way he makes his livelihood, so that is one case where it may be permissible, at least until Rosh Chodesh Av. I mean, at least until the 90s.
In Israel, probably would be easy, but I have a friend in Melbourne who's a professional violinist.
Okay.
He plays with the Melbourne Philharmonic.
Right, so that's not...
So, you know,
right.
This is done as
well. Right, so that for sure would be permissible.
Well, why would you get a leniency if, like, for example, during Shemitah, there's no leniency for Parnassus?
So, every halacha is different. Meaning, when it comes to this issue, a lot of the issues during the 3 weeks are custom. It's not halacha, it's not prohibition, it's custom. As opposed to maybe during part of some of the 9 days issues, which we'll see in a minute, some of them might be halacha. Some also might be custom. But anytime you're dealing with the custom, if you have an issue with a livelihood, and there's a custom, and it's going to be difficult for you, so again, it's not something you could just do on your own, but if you consult with a rav, so in general, the general psak in that type of situation is that a custom in a situation of major difficulty because of parnasa will often be permissible. Okay. That's the situation here.
A musician who doesn't rely on it for his parnasa, but he wants to play for himself.
Practice.
Probably not okay, though it depends on what the case is, meaning it depends on why he wants to do it.
Because
he wants to have a good time, or?
For himself, because he plays every day throughout the year,
right.
Because it's his passion.
Right, so that's probably exactly what we want to avoid here.
Okay.
Meaning,
and what about the musician who isn't going to play for a crowd? You've got like an Avram Fried kind of a person who isn't going to play, but he needs to practice.
Right, so practicing might be permissible. Okay, now again, if there's a way to practice without musicians, I'm not Avram Fried here, so I can't tell you what he's going to do. So again, I don't know how practical this is for us, but in that case, if they're practicing for the purpose of practice rather than for the purpose of enjoyment, or simcha, okay, joy, so then that might be permissible. Okay, which again, well, some of the posts can say, and I don't want to get into this now, if any of your kids have, you know, music lessons or something like that, that would be the more practical example. So I would say that like this, most of the posts can do frown at it, I mean, they're not happy about the idea. But if push comes to shove, for whatever reason you feel that you need to or it's important, so if they're practicing, meaning they're doing it because they're practicing to play and not because they enjoy it. I mean, I hope they do enjoy it, but the point is they're not doing it because they enjoy it, they're doing it because they have to go to practice. So then already there may be more room to be lenient about it. Okay? Now again, I'm not telling you that I think it's a good idea. I think it's not a good idea. I think it's frowned on. I don't think it's great. But if you need leniencies, so this is the kind of case where there might be leniency because you're not doing it for enjoyment. The problem is, if you like it also, and you're also doing it for practice, then I would say probably not. It has to be where you're only doing it because you get to practice, not because you really are having a good time.
So, Nikki, maybe a practical example of this. I was told in years previously, listening to music for the sake of exercise, meaning that without the music, you wouldn't be able to get through the exercise.
Excellent. Okay, great.
That you could do.
Oh, great. So that's
good. In 3 weeks, but not in the 9 days.
Good. Okay. So one can play with that psak a little bit, but I'll get to that in just a second.
Okay.
What about in a case, basically, this is exactly your example, but I'll give you another similar example as well. If the music that you're listening to, again, let's assume for now it's recorded, is background music, okay, meaning you're not listening to the music because you specifically only want to listen to the music for the music's sake, you're listening to the music for an ulterior motive, let's say. Okay, you have a different reason why it's on background. Exactly. So Rabbi Willig, one of my rabbis from YU, so that was the example that he brought, was basically if you're in the car and you want to listen to music in the car. Now, just to listen to music because you enjoy it is probably not going to be okay. However, this is what Rabbi Willig says, another post can agree with this as well. If the reason why you're listening to music is because you just need something in the background, otherwise it'll go out of your mind, if you're driving, or you need it in order to stay awake, you're afraid you're going to fall asleep or doze off, anything like that, that is background, then the main reason you're doing it is not for enjoyment, okay, or pleasure, or simcha. So Rabbi Willig and others would say that that's permissible. Okay. So again, the point you can enjoy
anyway,
it, but
I get through dishes for once.
There you go.
Get through a sink full of dishes.
I hear. It's a little rough. The point is that you're not listening to it for the purpose of enjoyment, even if this enjoyment is like a side benefit. But the primary reason why you're listening to it is because you want to stay awake, or because And in your case, if it's exercise, because you need to exercise well, and that's the way to exercise well. So that would be the grounds to permit it. Okay, I mean, that's a heter that you can use. It's not like something if you're only stuck. That's a heter which is usable. But you have to be honest with yourself. It can't be that you're putting on the music because you want the music. It has to be you're putting on the music because you need it for a different reason. And it could be you'll enjoy it a little bit also. That's not your main motive. Okay. Another example, another way to get through this, by the way, which I'm assuming most of you are familiar with, is a cappella music. Okay, so most poskim hold that even if you're machmir on music, in whatever situation it is, a cappella music is probably okay.
What's music?
A cappella music is when they don't have
instruments.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what a lot of people do. These types of CDs and music now is actually becoming very popular, at least in the Jewish world.
Yeah,
what?
That's why they're trying.
Yeah, exactly. So in the Jewish world, you can find a lot of this kind of stuff, either CDs or on the internet. So that's another great way to get around this problem, even if you're, you know, if you want to be machmir for doing the car or other stuff. There's tons of this stuff now you can find, and it sounds really good. I will just mention that Rav, if anybody's familiar with Rav Belsky, Rav Yisrael Belsky Zatzal, he was one of the poskim for the OU in New York, who just passed away a couple months ago. Anybody heard of him? He was one of the big poskim for the OU. Yeah, that's right. Mishpacha magazine ran a thing on him a different one. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He was one of the big poskim for the OU. So he actually was one of the machmirim about this issue. He actually felt that a cappella music is so musically and digitally enhanced that it's almost like real music. So I'll tell you the truth. Personally, I really identify with that, and I really enjoy music, so I'm machmir on that. But I wouldn't tell you that you have to be. Okay, I mean, that's a personal decision. Most poskim know that a cappella music is permissible if you want it, but if you choose to be machmir, there is a good reason why one could argue that it sounds almost as good as real music, but maybe if the whole point is simcha, that really you should be machmir on that also. But that's, again, in my mind, that's a personal chumrah if you want to take it, and it's not something that you have to do.
I have a question. Yeah. Yesterday, in the park, they had pantomime, right?
Yeah,
I went there and they had music. I felt guilty straight away.
So I
saw everybody else was there, so I thought maybe the reason why I stayed.
But they've done that before during the 3 weeks, and they have like things in the park with like with music.
I thought the whole idea of doing pantomime was because you're not allowed to use music, so they're doing something
right.
A bit
so,
different. But then we
to be honest, I wasn't there. I mean, our house is not far from the park, so we just managed to hear just by being outside. We managed to hear a little bit. But I couldn't tell what they were doing. Was it real music or was it just like background drums and a few other things?
No, it was background. It was like from a tape, I think.
Uh-huh.
He had somebody there.
Yeah, they've done it before where they have like a CD on as well.
Okay. So if you would have asked me... Was that... Right. So if you would have asked me...
No, but my second grade, he told me I was allowed to say, ask. He was aware of that.
So what did he do?
He asked me if we were allowed to stay because there's music. Uh-huh. And I said, oh, so everybody else thinks.
Okay, so here's the thing. So if you would have asked me to begin with, again, I'm not the one in charge here, but if you would have asked me, I would have said that it's probably better to not have that kind of music in a very public way during the 3 weeks. That's what I would have said. However, once it's being done, if it's really mainly background music, meaning the point of the event is not to listen to the music, it's background music to play while they're doing some other thing with the guy on stage. I don't know. I wasn't there, so I didn't see what happens. But if they had some other part, what exactly were they doing?
A show of pantomime.
Okay, fine. So it was a show of pantomime. You know, the point of, again, because it was background music, so there is some room to be lenient. I don't know if he has to leave.
It was only at the beginning also.
I understand,
but
right.
But still, it did make right. The whole thing happen.
I understand, right. So that's why I would have said it's probably better to avoid that if they were, you know, in the planning stages. Once it's being done, if it's only mainly as background, I'm not sure if I would have said that it can't go.
I was surprised.
I don't know, though. It could be that somebody asked Rav Hadayah, and Hadayah is the Rav of the Yishuv. He may have told them that since it's for kids or whatever else, maybe it's permissible. I don't know. I haven't seen him in the last couple days. Also, you're right. So it's not nearly as severe as some of the other as later, you know, in another week or two.
I think a lot of these events are separate. Like they don't ask where
Hadayah. So that's probably true, right? So that's the problem. If that's correct, then that's why I would say that I think there should be, you know, in the planning stages. Mm. It's not hard to avoid this. You don't have to have music to have a successful event. It's
that's
nice.
I was very surprised.
Helps. But it doesn't. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why, I'm not so in favor of in a public way to have these kinds of things. But again, you know, it could be that they did ask. Maybe they didn't ask. I don't know. But if they would have asked Rav Hadayah, maybe he would have said it's okay. I don't know. I can't speak for him. You know, when I see him sometime soon, I could ask him. But I haven't seen him recently. But anyways, that's you know my perspective on it. If your kids are aware of it and they, you know, feel uncomfortable there, you could tell them that maybe they can choose not to go. But if they want to go, and it's not the main point, it's not music, it's background, I think there's room to allow them to stay. Certainly if they're not that old, meaning certainly if they're like 5 or 6 or 7, I think there's room to allow it. By already 9 or 10, one can debate it. You know, it can go either way on that point. Okay, let's go to the next question. Any other points about music before we move on? Okay, great. Last thing for the 3 weeks is saying Shachianu. Yeah, there's a custom during the 3 weeks that we generally do not make the bracha of Shachianu. Shachianu is often made on a new fruit, on certain kinds of new clothing. Though again, new clothing is it depends. It's not so clear cut what types of clothing. Today, most types of clothing we wouldn't necessarily make a Shachianu on. It really would have to be like something very fancy. A new suit for a male, or maybe a new fancy dress for a female, or something similar in that type of regard, or other kinds of very other types of house things. If you bought a new car, maybe you could make a Shachianu, something like that. So so generally the custom is not to make a Shachianu during the 3 weeks. However, not everybody agrees. I mean, there are some posts that say that's not correct. Okay, so that's, maybe we'll see that for in a couple of minutes, but you know, sales for clothing, most clothing you wouldn't make a Shachianu anyway. If you're talking about clothing that is really expensive or really important to you, so if you won't have the sale afterwards, you're allowed to buy the clothing. And you maybe there.
That's why they have all the sales now.
Yeah, they really.
I see. Right.
They do.
Very interesting. That's a question. That's a question. One could. I've seen both. If the car is for multiple people, one could say maybe you make it to one makes you. But other persons say maybe you wouldn't make a shop. Maybe motion talks about making a shop.
Didn't need to have people possibly. So you're saying if you buy the clothes on sale, you should put them away?
Or no, so here's the thing. So it's unclear.
Anyway.
The best thing to do is not to buy the clothes that need a Shachianu during this time. But not everybody agrees with that.
You don't see Shachianu like for Chagim, like if on Pesach you buy like a dress.
If it's a fancy dress, and or you think that it's something which is very special to you or your kids or whatever it is, then you could make a Shachianu. In this situation, it's better not to buy it during the 3 weeks. But if you need to buy it during this period, so some would say that you can buy it and then make the Shachianu during the time. Others would say wait till Shabbos. And on Shabbos, most posts hold that you're allowed to make Shachianu. So maybe you can wear it on Shabbos and make a Shachianu before you wear it on Shabbos. Again, without going into the details now, there's a discussion when you're supposed to make a Shachianu on clothing in the first place. Some people say it's when you buy it. Some people say it's when you wear it the first time. So if you're going to wear it the first time on Shabbos, maybe you could say follow the opinion that you make it before you wear it.
Do you make Shachianu for everything you buy? Or just
No. It's got to be special and expensive. Or some, you know, for you, expensive. It could be individual. It doesn't have to be everybody, you know, being the same thing. Again, some say on Shabbos also you don't make a Shachianu, but many postmen say that on Shabbos you would be allowed to. So if there's something that's specific, you know, that's relevant for that, either a new fruit or clothing that is not going to wait till after the 3 weeks, then you can do it on Shabbos, according to many opinions. Okay, let's go into the 9 days. You have to tell me if
what
you want to.
Yeah.
Okay, so the during the 3 weeks, most posts can hold that swimming is permissible.
Even
for Yeah. 9 days is more of a question in terms of swimming. The other issue during the 3 weeks is things which are especially dangerous. Okay, I mean, there is a comment in the Shulchan Aruch about things that are especially dangerous should be avoided during the 3 weeks because it's a time of danger. Meaning, because of everything that's happened in our history, we generally are afraid that there's some sort of, you know, the same way that we say about other holidays, that the time of year sort of affects what's going on in the air, you know, and sort of it replays itself every year all over again. The time of Pesach is the time of redemption all over again. And the time of the 3 weeks, unfortunately, is a bit of a time of danger and of destruction in some spiritual realm every year. And therefore, they say don't do dangerous things. So most swimming in a swimming pool is not considered to be dangerous. Again, you should have a lifeguard, et cetera, but if you're talking about, you know, swimming in the ocean in a place which is known to have high waves or something like that, I would say that should probably be avoided. Okay. But things which are considered to be very normal and regular, you know, that's fine. Okay.
Jellyfish season.
What'd you say?
Jellyfish are the most prominent during the 3 weeks.
Really? You know this is true, or you're...
I know, I've heard it.
Really?
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
They go out to tissue.
Wow. I don't know how jellyfish know something that we don't,
well,
you know, but they...
Yes. Born?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm.
Wow. Okay.
It's the heat.
It's the heat. I see. It's very interesting. And it happens to be during this time of year, so... Okay. All right. Great. So let's go. Let's move into the 9 days now. All right. Let's see how much of this we can cover over the next 20 minutes or so. In terms of the 9 days and the time before Tisha B'Av, obviously there's a number of halachos that are very, very important and very, very relevant. And we'll try to go through them as many as we can, one by one. Okay. The first thing to keep in mind is that there is a bit of a difference between what's called the 9 days, starting from Rosh Chodesh, and the other period, which is called Shavua Shechalbo, the period, the week before Tisha B'Av. Meaning there are some halachos that are relevant from the beginning of the 9 days from Rosh Chodesh, and others that are relevant only from during the week of Shavua Shechalbo, meaning from the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av to Tisha B'Av itself. Again, without getting into too many details, for Ashkenazim, most things we apply from the beginning of the 9 days, from Rosh Chodesh. For Sephardim, there's a bit more of a question about it. This year is actually a major, major difference of opinion, because this year Tisha B'Av is on Sunday. So again, without getting too many details, there is a machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch whether this year was
say the eating milk and whatever.
Right. Exactly. So is this year considered to be? Is there any Shavuot Shechalba or not? Meaning, if Tisha B'Av is on Sunday, was it? That's exactly the question, and it's a big machlokas. The bottom line is that for Sephardim, for most things, Sephardim are lenient, that this year there would not be any Shavuot Shechalba. Okay? For Ashkenazim, because Tisha B'Av is on Sunday, even though the 9th of Av is actually on Shabbos, but because we commemorate Tisha B'Av.
Isn't fasting in general more lenient?
Correct, yes, that is true. And maybe if we have...
Would you say?
Right, correct. So if we have another shear, and if not, but if we do have another shear, that would be a very important thing to discuss for this year, that the rules of fasting for this year are a little bit more lenient. Than in general, because it's been pushed off from Shabbos. Okay. Anyway, for this type of thing, for Ashkenazim in general, this is not going to make a difference at all, because for Ashkenazim, we generally hold from Rosh Chodesh, all these things apply, either as, at least as in terms of custom, even if it's not actual halacha, at least in terms of custom. Let's talk about what some of the things are. Okay, so the basic idea is that it says, Mimatzim b'simcha, we reduce our joy during this time period, because the beginning of Av is very, very close to the period of Tisha B'Av, the destruction of the temple. So we're not just having customs here of, male weddings. This is actually a real idea of trying to reduce the amount of simcha that we have to get ourselves in the mood of understanding that we're really missing something here. This is not a happy time when we're realizing that we don't have the base of Mikdash and everything that represents. Okay. So in terms of that, how does that play itself out in terms of the different halachas? So one of the things where this comes up is basically is buying new things. Okay. Here, as opposed to the question before we had about Shechiyanu, here it's a little bit more stringent during the 9 days. And here, this everybody basically agrees, that you're not really supposed to buy anything which gives you a lot of pleasure during the 9 days. Okay, now we're not talking about just regular everyday household things, regular foods, things that you need. You're missing, I don't know what, you're missing a peeler, or you're missing other things in your house that you need. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about things that you don't really need, that you're getting because they give you a lot of pleasure, or it's something which is really nice, etc., etc., etc. What'd you say?
Like a piece of jewelry.
Yeah, something like that. That would be a good example. Okay. There's even discussion, by the way, about buying sfarim. That maybe buying sfarim is also problematic. The custom is to allow it because it's a mitzvah, it's learning Torah. But just to give you a sense that some people will really go very far with this, anything which will give you a lot of pleasure when you buy generally should be avoided during the 9 days. Again, unless it's something which you really need. If it's a real necessity, it's permissible. But again, big things like buying a car and buying curtains.
I remember learning in Chutz La'aretz,
yeah,
that Dafka buying a house in Israel during the 9 days is permitted.
Oh, okay. So there is something to that, though. If you can avoid it, it's better to not do it during the 9 days. But yes, because
3 weeks,
that's fine. That's totally fine. Okay, totally fine. But because there's a mitzvah here about buying a house in Israel, so then that's definitely something
that's
which
the deal comes through. That's
right, exactly. If it comes through, that's when it comes through. Correct, correct. Exactly. That's definitely true.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, what we generally say, if you're able to, so any types of home improvements. Again, this is not so clear cut, but a lot of the poskim say that any types of home improvements, which include interior designing. Many poskim say that painting is also included, though again, it depends on the situation. If your walls are falling apart, that's not what we're talking about. But if you're painting because you feel, okay, it's nice to do a new paint job. If you're putting in a garden, or you're putting in a patio outside, or anything like that, the generally accepted custom is that it should be avoided during the 9 days. Okay, it shouldn't be done during this period of time. Again, unless it's a major necessity. If it's a major necessity, for whatever reason, then that's not what we're talking about. But just, you want to do something extra, something nice. So most of the poskim say that's included in the rule of not buying new things and not building new things. They call building for pleasure. Netiyah shel simcha, planting for pleasure or for joy, is mentioned in the Mishnah. All these things are generally, are going to be recommended to be avoided. So again, try to avoid all those kinds of interior design and house stuff if you're able to during the 9 days.
Does this include planting in the garden?
Yeah. Well, no. What I'm talking about is actually putting in a whole garden. Okay.
Okay.
If you're just putting in
one tree, if it gives you pleasure.
So trees generally probably should be avoided also if it gives you pleasure. Okay. If you're talking about planting a vegetable, maybe that's not the same thing. But if you're talking about actually planting a real tree, you're taking a tree from a nursery and transplanting it into your garden. If it's something which gives you pleasure, then that pleasure should be avoided. So that's the only question. Put it this way: if for whatever reason you have to plant it now, then maybe it would be permissible. But if you just choose, it's better. It probably should not be done during this period of time.
I just moved into my house.
Oh, wonderful! I should have.
Thank you.
You should have told him.
Okay, I haven't unpacked everything.
Right.
Time. let's say, I needed a tradesman to help me.
Right? Okay.
The only time he has me, let's say, during right. 9 days, could he put up my paintings? Painting, not that I yeah. bought, that I have already for 20, 30 years,
right.
to put on the wall. Would that be permissible? If it's the only time he has, yes.
Right. If it's the only time he has and you're just putting paintings on a wall, I would say that's probably okay. What I'm talking about is actually like repainting all the walls.
It's not very important.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, those kind of things are probably not such a big deal. But if we're talking about actually like making another wall or repainting a whole wall or something like that, that's already enough of a major thing that I would say that's best to be avoided. I have in my notes here, very interesting, from your husband, actually, that apparently, I don't know what this was, I have my notes here that a couple years ago, there was a question about doing home improvement with knocking down some walls, and I don't know where this was, I don't know if it was your case or somebody else's case, that was like almost like a construction site in the house, and the question whether it was permissible to allow that or not, because it wasn't even fun to be there in the first place. Sound familiar? Not at all? Okay. I have no idea, but I have Josh's name here. Anyway, so there are some that are lenient if the workers are not Jewish, so it's a little bit better. But again, it's not great, but if there are non-Jewish workers, especially if they didn't have to do it during this time, if you hire them before the 9 days and they choose to do it now also, so then there is some room to be lenient if necessary.
Well, we were in Chicago, we got a new roof, and they did come like
so maybe that's what he was talking about. That's probably what he was talking
like,
about.
We
then.
Woke up and they were like, "What are they doing here?" And we called the rabbi and said, "They're already there." Just
right.
Playing.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it was.
Right. That's probably what he was referring to. So again, if you could plan it to avoid it, it's probably better. But so if they're already there, especially if they're non-Jews and it's difficult for you, and so you know there maybe is room to be lenient. Again, I said before about moving during the 9 days, and generally we try to avoid it. But practically, if you need to move during the 9 days, you're allowed to. Okay, it's not a halachic prohibition to move during the 9 days. That's not building, it's not planting. But again, we try to avoid it. What'd you say?
Especially if it's earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
In which case you are building and planting.
Right.
There you go.
Okay.
Prefer not to start a business.
So business is also a machlokas, what the story is with business. Some say that you can't do more business than you need in order to have enough to live, to sustain yourself. Today, the custom is not to rely on that because today, usually people have jobs.
Yeah.
And if you just cut your job in half, you will get fired after the first 3 days or whatever it is. So generally today, that's permissible. Okay, normal business today is permissible.
But
okay.
To get into like a new business or...
Yeah, that's probably also fine. And the custom today is to be pretty lenient about business types of things. Business today is not usually considered to be pleasure. Usually.
They
usually.
Say, it's just not muscle thing.
Right.
Something
so that's a different story. So correct. You're right. Meaning in terms of the thing we said before, maybe it's not the most auspicious time. The same reason why they say you shouldn't have a court case with a non-Jew during the 9 days. So I hear that, and there's what to be said about that. But that's not, you know, I'm not sure that would be a halachic prohibition. That might be something which, you know, should be avoided. But today, again, the custom is to be lenient about business. So, okay. Let's move on here. We don't have so much time left, so let's see how much we can do very quickly. In terms of laundry, so this is a big one, okay? So in terms of laundry, so in terms of, so Ashkenazim generally are machmir during from the 9 days, from Rosh Chodesh. Sfaradim already are a little bit more lenient. Sfaradim maintain this prohibition only from Shavuot Shechalbo. So therefore, this year for Sfaradim, there's actually a lot of room to be lenient about washing clothes. Maybe they may not be able to do it for you, but maybe for themselves, it's not. Many Sfaradim would be lenient about this. When it comes to Ashkenazim, so for the rest of us, basically you can't do laundry during the 9 days. And basically what that means is you need to prepare yourself before the 9 days to make sure that everything that you need during the 9 days is already washed. Okay?
Even if you have babies.
So there's 2 points to mention now. Number one, when you're dealing with children's clothes, if you have enough clothes to get through the whole time, then that's what you should do. If you don't, because they get dirty and et cetera, and you need to wash, so for children, it's generally permissible to wash what's necessary. In addition, if you did it at the beginning of the period, and then in the middle you run out and you need to wash more, so for children, it's generally permissible because it's assumed that things get dirty. That would be permissible when necessary. For adults, again, you shouldn't rely on that because most adults have enough clothing to get through, but if for some reason there's a problem... So there is a leniency that you can, if you have like only one thing to wear, you have nothing to wear, you can wash one or two things in order to wear what you need. You can't wash your whole laundry, your whole wardrobe, but you can wash what you need in order to get through if necessary. But again, that's not l'chadchila. I mean, that's only if you get stuck. That's not, you're supposed to plan in advance so that doesn't happen.
Yeah,
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
There's certain clothing, like, for example, sports clothing, that if you don't wash it straight away, the smell stays in there forever.
Good
and
point.
Ever.
Okay. Great
you can
point.
Check it out.
So that would probably
or
be permissible.
A stain.
Good.
That so if mostly, you don't deal
right.
with it straight away.
Yes, probably yes.
If it's in Israel or in the States, but I've heard a lot of parents complain, like the boys come home from camp during the 9 days, and then they have all their laundry.
Right.
And
In the States, usually camp goes till the end of August. No?
Oh,
at least
maybe
till
it's here. I
maybe
don't
it's
know.
First season, first month. I don't know. It could be here in Israel.
I've heard people complain about that. Like that
okay, so basically the first thing has to be, again, I don't know if it's doable, but in the situation where it can be, you know, from the beginning, it can be, you know, with a little bit of thought and planning, you can avoid it. That's the best thing to do. If you can't do that and they really have no clothes, so then you can wash what's necessary. Not the whole thing, but you can wash a couple pieces of clothing that are necessary to get through. The same thing is true also if you need specific types of clothing. So
this isn't a matter of needing...
I'm sorry, your case was different.
It's just
your
a
case
matter
was,
of... Like,
I'm sorry, your case...
Throwing
I'm sorry.
Out or washing.
Right, right. So that's also permissible.
Well,
and in there,
coming home from camp, stinky.
Okay, so again, it depends. If it's...
Yeah, that's true. It's when it grows.
Is there a difference between hand washing and washing machine?
Probably not. Though it's a good suggestion, and there is a bit of a discussion, but the bottom line is that it's not different.
It makes no difference.
Yeah, no difference. You can't do either one. So basically, if the clothing is going to get ruined otherwise, that's not just a question of washing clothes. That's a question of hefset, of a loss, of preventing a loss. That's permissible. Okay, that's definitely permissible to wash if it's going to get ruined otherwise. Same thing is true if you have a stain, and the stain won't come out if you wait till a week and have to wash it later. Again, you can put some stain remover on it before if you want, but if you need to, so that would also be permissible. There are some posts, by the way, though, that say that you shouldn't even clean a stain during the 9 days. I find this very, very difficult. I don't know what you're supposed to do because I get stains all the time. You know, every time I make dinner, you know, I'm in the kitchen and I actually take care of my kids. And I find stains all over the place.
Yeah,
what am I supposed to do? So I follow the opinions that say that you could be a little more lenient in terms of not washing. Let's say you just have like one stain, you know, you want to just rub it off or something like that with a little bit of water and soap. So unnecessary. If you ask me, I think there's room to allow that, even though not all the posts can agree with that. Okay. I mean, that's not a question of washing in a laundry. That's a question of just rubbing out a stain. But I would say that there's room to allow that, even though it's not so clear-cut.
I've heard of people that when they have clothes that are freshly laundered, they actually wear them.
But that's the next point. I didn't get to that yet. Hold on. I guess that. Okay. So again, I just mentioned the point about staining on your shirt. There's also a point here of Moshe Feinstein also has an idea that if, let's say, you have clothes, but not all of them are, let's say, you know, what you need for work. In order to go to work, you need, like, a specific type of clothes. Exactly. Or even whatever the type is, you don't have that type. You have a different type. But you're not going to go to work in shorts and a T-shirt. So in that case, if you don't have any of the clothes that you need for that purpose of activity, then you would be allowed to wash those clothes. And it doesn't mean that you have no clothes at all. It means you don't have the clothes that you need for whatever you need to do. Okay, so that's, again, another leniency to be...
If you have a job, like a hostess, that's what you need a uniform.
Correct, exactly. So that would be, according to this opinion of Moshe Feinstein, which I saw in the name of Rabbi Eider quoted it. Rabbi Eider is one of the ones that wrote some of the English halacha books. He has a pamphlet about the 9 days and the 3 weeks in English, which I have at home. I should have brought it. And so he quotes with Moshe saying that's permissible. The other aspect of this is not just that you can't wash clothes during the 9 days, but you also are not allowed to wear clean clothes during the 9 days. Now, how do you deal with that one in today's times? Okay, you know, 100 years ago, that was obvious because then they had, you know, three pairs of clothes, or even one pair of clothes, and they just wore the same thing for a month. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So what are you going to do? But today, that's not accepted to do that. Today, we wear clean clothes. So what do you do? So today, what do we... What?
Sorry, I'm jumping the gun.
What'd you say?
So I'm jumping the gun.
Right.
You wear everything.
Okay, exactly. So this is something that some people know. What some of the posts can have recommended, and this is pretty accepted today, is that ideally what you should do is try to wear all of your clothing before the 9 days. So I'll tell you what's usually done. It's a little bit funny the way that it's done, because I don't know if this is what was intended, but today it's hard, because thank God we have a lot of clothing today, is to wear each piece of clothing that you're planning to wear during the 9 days, to wear it for at least a short amount of time before Rosh Chodesh begins. Ideally, the best thing to do is wear it for an hour or two, but if you can't get that, at least wear it for like 5 or 10 minutes. So what I do, I find that, like,
you can't just like put it on and take it off straight away.
It's hard to say. It's if you have no time, I guess you can do that. The better thing to do is wear it for at least a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
There are certain clothes that you don't wash every time.
Yeah.
After you wear them, you know, a dress, a skirt.
So that's fine.
So there's no.
That's fine.
No issue.
That's fine. We're talking about
underwear.
So one second. So let me qualify here. Okay. So the first thing we're saying is that we're talking about something which is newly, freshly washed. Okay. Things which have already been worn once before and you wear again is totally fine. But things that have been recently washed and have not yet been worn since they were washed, that's included in what we're saying. The other point that you mentioned is that most of the posts can say as well that we're not talking about undergarments. Undergarments are generally worn you sweat, they get worn out very quickly. That's fine to wear them clean. Okay, what we're talking about is like shirts and pants and skirts and sweaters. I guess not this time of year, but those kinds of garments. That's what we're talking about. Right, okay, fine. So, those kinds of garments are the ones that we're saying that some of the posts recommend this idea of wearing it, putting it on for a little bit before the 9 days begin to avoid this problem. Yeah.
I've also heard, like, if you run out of time to do that, you could
So that's another piece. So I saw Rav Yashiv says that would be permissible also. Some posts can allow that during an avelus, when you're in mourning. So that's one of the things that's mentioned. So here also, I think it's Rav Yashiv who says that's permissible as well, meaning not just to put it on, but if you don't have time, again, I find it like Erev Rosh Chodesh Av is like one of my most frantic days of the year, like Erev Pesach almost, because I got to get through all my clothing, washing the clothing and putting them on. It's like crazy, and especially when you have a family. But that's another option that you can do if putting on the clothes is difficult. So if you step on them, okay, you may not want to do that.
Shoes?
Preferably with shoes, yes. I'm not going to say it's terrible if you don't use shoes, but preferably the point is that if you step on them, then they're not clean anymore. So you could do it without shoes, but then already it's not really so unclean. If you do it with shoes, it gets dirty. So, okay, so go like this afterwards and wash it off, but at least you feel like it's not freshly laundered. Which, again, is annoying, but that's the whole point, So try your best to be prepared. If you could do it, 3 days before Tisha B'Av, you'll have more time. Okay, but you have to, again, it's not so easy to do this, but this is really the way that it's supposed to be. Okay, this is not like a chumrah or an extra stringency, which this is like a real halacha here. So the really, ideally it's something you should try to figure out a way to do if possible. Any other questions about this?
Wow.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry, this one's that's a tough one. Alright, what is it? That's on Tisha B'Av only, though.
The 9 days
shoes is fine. Okay. Again, l'chadchila, it's better. You're not really supposed to buy new shoes during the 9 days. The same thing as other new clothing. That's not really supposed to be done. Okay. By the way, you can fix old clothing. If clothing needs to be sewn or repaired or whatever, that's generally permissible.
So there's no leniency if there's a sale in the 9 days.
There is. I forgot. If I didn't mention it before, I apologize. The post can basically say, even the Mishnah Berurah points this out, if there's a sale or something which was called Davar Ha'avud, okay, it's going to be lost. Meaning if you wait till after the 9 days, it's gone. You won't be able to get the same price, not like a 5 shekel difference, but like, a little more significant than that. So again, everybody's a little different. It depends on individually how much you think is a big sale. But if you feel it's a big sale that you wouldn't want to miss, then that would be permissible to buy to get during the 9 days. Okay? Anything. But again, you got to be honest about it. It can't be just like, I want to get it now, and my excuse is, well, it's 5 shekel more, so I'm going to get, it's a loss. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, again, if you're somebody who has no money, maybe 5 shekel is a loss. But something that for you is considered to be a significant difference in money that you wouldn't want to wait if possible. And you would go out of your way to buy it now, even if it meant it was inconvenient, even if it meant you had to take off of work for an hour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you would still do it. So in that situation, there would definitely be room to allow buying it during the 9 days. Okay. Okay, we have a couple more points. You'll have to tell me how you want to deal with it in terms of timing. I'll just tell you what the points are. Meat and wine is one point. That having a siyum during the 9 days. Bathing, showering, and swimming. And then a few other things like flying and surgery and stuff like that. All right, what do you want to do? You want to stop here and try to do this a different time? You want to go through it quickly, as fast as we can? What's the vote? Go through it quickly? Okay, fine. Feel free to leave if you need to leave. It's being recorded, so you can listen to it afterwards. We'll try to... Okay, all right. Okay, you don't have to stay, right? Anyway, feel free to leave if you need to leave, and I'll try to do it quickly. Okay, so now, in terms of eating meat and drinking wine, this is also a big one. For this one, also, Sfaradim have it easy this year. This is generally accepted for Shavua Shechalbo, and generally Sfaradim can eat meat and drink wine the entire period of this year's 9 days until Shabbos, until Shabbat.
I have relatives who are lactose intolerant, and they cannot eat even fish.
They can't drink milk or they can't eat meat?
No, they can't have dairies.
Okay. I see. So meaning they have a question.
And also they get the fish. So the only thing they can eat is...
Wow. I got it. Okay.
I have the son of it. Wow. He does not like fish, does not like eggs.
It's dairy. They don't like fish. They cannot. Wow. They can't physically get sick.
Okay.
No,
so without getting into too many details, just to give you the basic the basic principle. For this purpose, chicken and meat are basically the same thing. Okay, basically it's like this. Okay, because even for Ashkenazim, this is a custom. It's not a halacha. The halacha about eating meat is only during what's called the Surah HaMafseket. All right, meaning the meal right before Tisha B'Av, which this year we don't even have because it's in that way because it's Shabbos. We have Surah Shlishi, but it's not like the regular Surah HaMafseket. That's the halacha in the Gemara about when you're not allowed to have meat and drink wine. Everything else is a custom. So because it's all a custom, at least for Ashkenazim, during the 9 days, there is room to be lenient when necessary. Okay, the same thing as we mentioned before. So when it comes to somebody who has...
Wine and grape juice?
Meat and wine, and grape juice is included with wine. Grape juice is the same thing. Yeah, grape juice also is included. So therefore, if you have somebody who medically needs to eat meat or chicken or something like that, because of whatever the reason is, so in general, it's allowed. Okay? It doesn't mean that that's your first choice, but if you don't have other choices or it's difficult, so then it's definitely going to be allowed. And again, you can give yourself already quite a few different practical applications of that rule. It's one of which you already mentioned. There's a few others, but again, I'm not going to go into them now. You get the idea. Okay? That's basically the point with that. Okay. Let's do just a couple other points of how to define meat and wine, what they are. Okay? So in terms of meat, so things that are, let's say you have a dish which has meat plus other things, meat and potatoes cooked in the same dish. Cholent with meat and potatoes. On Shabbos is perfectly fine, but let's say you have it as leftovers. So in general, that's generally not allowed. Okay? It's a machlokas, but the common custom is to forbid that. Okay? The common custom is that if meat was cooked in the dish, let's say meat and potatoes, so then even the potatoes you should not be eating during the 9 days. Okay? That's the generally accepted custom. However, if you use a pot, which is a bisari pot, but there's no meat in it when you cook, so that's permissible. Okay? That's fine. In terms of wine, so we said before that grape juice is also included. Anything that you put wine into in a food, let's say if you put wine into your meat or something like that, so if you can taste the wine, that's also not okay. Then generally the accepted custom is that we're machmir on that as well.
Maybe,
what?
Mm,
translate for me, please. I see. Yes.
With wine.
Right. Shabbos is fine. Okay, Shabbos is permissible to eat meat and drink wine. That's for sure. But during the weeks, again, if you can taste the wine... right. Okay. If you can taste the wine, that's generally not allowed. There are some, by the way, that if you ask about tasting, like on Erev Shabbos, some people have a custom to taste their Shabbos food on Friday afternoon. We don't have that custom, but some people do. If you have that custom, put it this way, if you ask me, it's better to avoid it, but there are some postmen that allow it. Okay, because the Arizal was very, very big into tasting food on Erev Shabbos.
Isn't that the same as like you can shout, you can like prepare yourself early in the day when you can't wash during the 9 days, but Erev Shabbos you can do those.
So
things.
So for bathing it's more accepted that it would be permissible. For eating meat, not as much. Though again, for tasting the Shabbos food, maybe it's okay. I saw there's some poskim, I forgot where I saw it, I think he brings it down in the safer here. There are some poskim that say that for children, after like in the afternoon of Friday afternoon, it's already like close to Shabbos and maybe they can eat food. Which I'll just give an example. If you're like making early Shabbos or whatever is this time of year, and you're giving kids, bisari food before Shabbos begins, so there are some postmen that say that maybe that's permissible, even though it's still during the 9 days. I think Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva somewhere or other. I think Rav Moshe also says that maybe not from the afternoon, but after Plaga Mincha, meaning after the earliest time that you can make Shabbos, which is about whatever time it is now. I think about 6:15 or 6:20 or so. After that time, I think Rav Moshe holds that for kids, you'd be allowed to give kids bisari food. Which again is a very practical application of this question that maybe would be permissible. Okay. But in general, the standard custom is to avoid it if possible. Okay. What else? In terms of Havdalah, so there's the whole question about what to do with Havdalah in terms of drinking wine or grape juice. The custom in generally for Ashkenazim, again, there's different opinions, but the custom for Ashkenazim is generally for the adult not to drink the wine or grape juice themselves, but to give it to a child who is older than 6 and less than 9. Why is that? So again, can skip it for now, but basically the idea is that if he's less than 6, then he doesn't count as drinking the wine. I mean, he's drinking instead of you. If he's less than 6, he doesn't count. He's too young. And if he's older than 9, he shouldn't be drinking the wine himself. That's basically in 10 seconds, that's basically the concept. Okay, so ideally, it should be a child who's older than 6 and less than 9 in terms of drinking the wine or grape juice. If you don't have such a child, then you can drink it yourself. Okay, meaning the person making Havdalah can't drink.
A 6-year-old or a 9-year-old.
Can you also just make
So the Aruch HaShulchan says that even ideally it's better to make on Chamar Medina. Chamar Medina is like beer and whiskey and stuff like that, and some posts say that coffee is included and some posts say that soda is included. It depends on who you ask, but that's also an option. It seems like the more accepted option is to do the other thing that I mentioned, but certainly that would be an option as well. Okay. if that works better for you for whatever reason, that would also be permissible. Okay. Next, in terms of making a siyum. So in making a siyum, the custom is to allow eating meat and drinking wine if there's a siyum on a masechet of Gemara. Okay, if you make a finished Tanakh or like a Mishnah, that doesn't count. But I'm stuck with the Gemara, or if you make like a whole Seder of Mishnayot, Seder Nashim or Seder, whatever it is, that would be generally permissible. If you invite other people to the Seder, they can come also, they can also eat. It's best to not make a point of like rushing to finish in order to finish Daska during the 9 days, but you know, even if you're doing it for the purpose of the 9 days and you plan that it should fall out, that's okay.
Something like that. Saying like if you're finishing a Shloshim.
Right, so that's for sure fine. Yeah, that's for sure fine. Yeah. Okay. Again, there are more details. We're not going to go into more details about that now. Okay, there's other questions here which I'm not going to go into, which are very interesting about if you own a restaurant, can you leave your restaurant which serves meat open during the 9 days? What about a supermarket which has meat products in it? Can you allow that? So again, that's not our issue now. We're not going to get into that. But it's an interesting, very, very interesting question. Okay. Next, in terms of bathing and showering and swimming. So here, there's different opinions about what the story is, even in terms of starting, whether it starts from Rosh Chodesh Av, the 9 days, or from Shavuot Shechalbo. There's two different options here that some are machmir already from the 9 days, and others are makil, only from Shavuot Shechalbo, which means that this year it would be permissible to have bathing and showering and swimming, and you have to figure out what your custom is. When it comes to Ashkenazim, the custom for Ashkenazim is very clear-cut, that we're machmir from Rosh Chodesh Av. Okay? And by the way, when you say Rosh Chodesh Av, what that means is basically we accept that that's already from Shkia, okay? Meaning from sunset. This year, I think Rosh Chodesh Av is Friday, so I guess it would be Thursday night already from about 7:40 or so. That already, all the restrictions are already in place in terms of eating meat, in terms of wearing new clothing, and all kind of stuff like that. That's all included, okay? In terms of bathing, the custom for bathing is that you don't wash in hot water, okay? No hot water. Lukewarm water is permissible, but hot water generally should not be allowed unless it's medically necessary, okay? But otherwise, lukewarm water, you should prefer that, or somewhat cold water. The general custom is not to wash your whole body in cold water either, okay? Meaning to go swimming, that's where the custom of swimming comes from, not going swimming during the 9 days, because you're washing your whole body in cold water. If you take a bath of the whole body together, again, if it's necessary for cleanliness, it's permissible, but if it's for pleasure, it should not be done. That's the main distinction here. Cleanliness is generally going to be accepted that it's permissible. Pleasure is going to be forbidden.
So if a person has a higher standard of cleanliness, they can
permissible. Yeah. Permissible, yeah, correct. But again, you have to be honest about it, okay? Just as an example, a lot of the posts held that you're not allowed to use shampoo and soap during the 9 days. And today, that's already like, what are you talking about? That's cleanliness. That's normal cleanliness today. So today, the bottom line is that's permissible. But the point is that, again, because based on the society, what, you know, if it changes, then we follow what the society considers to be a
and
regular standard of hygiene.
Because it's not, I mean, it's not...
Same rule, meaning children should follow the halacha. But again, if children get dirty and you would take a bath every other day, that's perfectly permissible. But it's better to avoid hot water if they can avoid it. Okay, if they can't deal with baths that are not hot water, then you can allow it. But most kids, lukewarm water is fine. You know, somewhat hot. You know, somewhat warm but not hot.
I feel like this time of year, though, like a hot shower or bath is so unappealing. Like I always want like cold water.
I hear that. Yeah, I hear that. So then, for sure, that's fine. I mean, that's not. The problem is that generally hot water is considered to be like an act of more, you know, pleasure. So that's why it generally would not be allowed. And cold showers or cold baths is for sure fine, regardless of how much you enjoy it. Okay. Again, there are more details here which we can go into, but I think we're going to skip them for now. Any other particular questions about this?
Nitilat Yadayim? Is that only for...
That's fine. That's only Tisha B'Av. Yeah, that's fine. Here we're talking about washing your whole body. Okay.
And cutting nails?
Cutting nails are different opinions. So for cutting nails, ideally it's better to cut before the 9 days. But if you miss that and you need to cut during the 9 days, that would be permissible. That's Mishnah Berurah brings this down also. And certainly if you need to go to the mikvah for women and you need to cut nails for going to the mikvah, that's for sure permissible. Because that everybody agrees is permissible. By the way, I should also mention that many posts can hold that on Friday afternoon for Shabbos, it's permissible to take a hot shower. Okay? Again, not everybody agrees, but there definitely are posts that allow taking a hot shower on Friday afternoon for Shabbos. Okay. Okay, again, you don't have to use that. You don't have to bill yourself that you don't want to. Yeah. Okay. Cold is still fine. Okay, in terms of swimming, so again, we mentioned swimming generally should be avoided. I think here we have no question because the pool is closed during the 9 days, at least in Yab and Yamin. Swimming, which is necessary for medical conditions or therapeutic purposes, anything like that would be permissible because it's the same idea. It's not being done for pleasure. It's being done for an important purpose. However, again, I think this is more common in America. In the United States, you have like camps, and they have like they all say instructional swim is permissible and free swim is not. Anybody ever heard that? And you're not from the United States, but you're assuming you heard the idea of it, right? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Hydrotherapy here.
What'd you say?
Hydrotherapy here.
Right. So hydrotherapy is probably more permissible because that's really done for
It is medical, yeah.
assuming that the hydrotherapy is really because you need it and not just because you were trying to get money out of Kupat Cholim and really just want to get, you know. So again, if you ask me, swimming lessons is probably to be avoided during the 9 days. Okay, meaning medical reason to swim is different than instructional swim. Again, so this is not what many of the camps do in the 9 days. Personally, I think that they're being too makil. But again, they have to. Each one has to get their own sock, and obviously, it's not so easy. I could just say it in camp. That messes up a lot of your, you know, your timetable if you have a lot of swimming. But the bottom line is, I think if you look at the poskim, most of the poskim seem to say that the main issue is pleasure, and therefore, if instructional swim gives you pleasure and enjoyment, even though it's annoying to be done to do what you're told, but if the bottom line is you enjoy being in the water, personally, I think that's not okay in a vacuum. And it would have to be like a medical need to be permissible. So again, you have to apply that in the proper way. But that's basically, in my mind, that's the rule. But again, as I said, some are more lenient about instructional swim or swimming lessons when necessary. Okay. A few other things just mentioned, and we'll finish up. So again, as we said before, about having a court case with a non-Jew should not be done because it's an inauspicious time. The same thing is true, by the way, for surgery. If you have a surgery, again, if it can't wait, obviously it's permissible. But if you can push it off, it's better to push it off till after the 9 days for the same idea, that it's not a good time to be doing dangerous activities like that. In terms of taking tiulim, a teal is okay, but if you're talking about a teal, which is like not so simple teal, it's like a bit of a dangerous type of teal, then maybe, again, same idea, maybe it's better to avoid during the 9 days. There are some poskim that do not allow flying for the same reason during the 9 days. Okay, I saw in the Sefer Rav Vosner from B'nai Brak, so he recommends against flying. I saw the Nitei Gavriel or Rav Zinner also did not like the idea, unless you're flying here to Israel, because that's a nice mitzvah. But again, it's one of these things which is like, you know, these days, if you look at the statistics, I think it's safer to fly than to drive a car. And especially in this country, I think that's for sure true. So if you ask me, push comes to shove, if you need to fly, I don't think that it's forbidden to fly during the 9 days. But in general, the custom is to avoid it if you can avoid it. Okay, I mean, if you don't need to fly during the 9 days,
you can get a leniency for work.
Yeah. Anything which you need to do for flying is okay. If it's something which you're doing for pleasure, or going to visit, or whatever, all those kind of things. So again, if you ask me, it's better to push it off either to after or do it before if you can. But if there's any reason why you can't, either because the prices are, you know, much different, and as we've seen, some of us are flying to the States after Tisha B'Av, it's such a difference, it's like double the price after Tisha B'Av. So if that's an important consideration, then it will be permissible to fly during the 9 days, I think. But if everything's in a vacuum, everything's equal, then it's better to avoid it. But again, is it really dangerous? Usually it's not, but unfortunately the last year we've seen a couple cases of planes, of things that happen to airplanes. Hopefully those planes are not planes that we would fly here from Israel. But, you know, whatever the case is, that in general, there would be room to allow it if necessary. Okay, any other questions before we just wrap up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Movies within one's home,
Movies are probably permissible, but if the movie is music-based, so then I would say that would be a problem. Okay, meaning any music in the movie, if it's just like background music or just to sort of make it, you know, livelier, you know, a flare, then I think that would be permissible.
Even that's during the 9 days?
Yeah. That's assuming that you're allowed to watch movies the rest of the year. That was one quote they always had, the name of Aaron Soloveitchik from Chicago. People asked him about, I think, about Sphere, the same idea, and he said, in his way, in his accents, you know, if it's permissible to watch movies the rest of the year, then it's also permissible during this time, implying that maybe you should think twice about that. But yeah, in turn, then I don't think that's a problem, again, unless it's like a music-based type of video or whatever.
And in the 3 weeks, is it in a movie theater?
Same thing. If you ask me, again, maybe you'll get different opinions from other people. If you ask me, I think it's fine. But again, if there's a lot of music involved, and music is like a very important part of the film, then I would say you should avoid it. Okay. Okay. Any other questions before we wrap up?
No. I think.
Okay. You
can. 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's fine. Feel free to contact me afterwards. You can ask anybody here for my email address. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Feel free to. I'm more than happy to help. Right. Yeah. Okay. Good.
And every year you do something.
That's also good. Also good.
I have a bad habit. I like singing.
Singing is fine.
I just do it automatically.
Singing is fine.
I walk in the street and I sing to amuse myself. To keep myself.
Singing is fine. There's no problem with singing. It's
then
music.
During the 9 days, almost.
It's okay. Singing is still fine. It's music that's the problem. Okay.
You reckon my singing is not music?
let's put it as a musical instrument.
I'm not a good singer.
Musical instruments, that's what I meant. Singing from your mouth, that type of singing is permissible. Okay, so just to wrap things up and just to put things into perspective again, the point of these halachos is not to make us be crazy and restriction as an idea of prohibition and limitation in the sense of we want to make life difficult. The point of the halachos here is to remind us that this time of year is when we realize that not everything is that it's supposed to be. Okay, now, how do you do that in everyday life? And this is not so simple. Okay, think about it. And yes, We live here in Eretz Yisrael, so we say it's a little. Unfortunately, you know, it's a little easier here because we see, unfortunately, a lot of things that have happened. At this, you know, this point, the rest of the world also, there are a lot of bad things that are happening. So
when we have your son for parents or whatever, so we'll be lighter, you have some candle. Why don't we do that for Tishabov?
So the truth is, there are some customs that some people do that, not in their houses so much, but in shul. Because it's a national day of mourning, so it's not, you know, right. So one of the customs that some people have in shul is to light candles, but because it's not an individual yahrzeit, it's a national mourning. So that's why I guess the yahrzeit candle is not as much of an accepted thing, because we're not mourning for individual people; we're mourning for the entire nation. So you're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna light yahrzeit candles for everybody. Anyway, so just to wrap this up, yeah.
No, I'm Tisha, but I've been supposed to learn Torah for pleasure. Right. During the 9 days.
That's fine. Totally fine. Yeah, totally fine. Okay, so because that's the point. We just have to think during the 9 days of how we're going to make ourselves realize that things are not as they're supposed to be here, and we're missing God's presence in the world, just to cut to the chase here. That's the point. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not revealed himself to us yet. We see a lot more of him here in Israel than we do in Chutz La'aretz. But at the end of the day, we don't always know what we're supposed to do. We don't always see, you know, the fact that, you know, a lot of other bad things are happening in this country and a lot of people are trying to attack us. And we don't see Hashem's presence on a day-to-day level of how we're supposed to live our lives. And that's something which we're really, really missing. And once you realize that, you realize that the halachas of not listening to music and not eating meat and not bathing are supposed to get us into the mindset of realizing, wow, yeah, we really are missing something here and I have to feel that something is lacking. So that's the point. The point is that if we can take the halachos and use them to get to ourselves to a higher level, to realize that, no, yes, it's annoying to not eat meat, and yes, it's annoying to not wash, but every time you think, oh, it's annoying, or I have to put on my clothes, whatever, stop for a second and think about, why am I doing this? Then you realize, yeah, I have to think about it and make myself realize that, yes, we want Mashiach to come. And sometimes we don't think about it. We go on with our everyday life, and thank God most of the time life is pretty good. And we sort of forget sometimes that we really... we want things to happen that are not happening. Yeah, yeah, we always say we want Mashiach now, but when do we really think about it? This is our time of year to actually think about what it means to have Mashiach and for the Geula to come. And what does it really mean to think, you know, what we're missing with the Beis Hamikdash?
It's like Pesach, like I said, when we sit at the table, we're supposed to transport ourselves,
Right.
And it's like Tisha B'Av, we have to remember what it was like.
100%.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a different emotion.
Two sides of the same coin.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one's Geula and one's...
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And during the 9 days also, and during the 3 weeks, you know, there's a very, very strong parallel to the laws of mourning here. Correct. So this is your opportunity. You know, if you want to take an opportunity to go online and go learn a little bit more about what life was like in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Today they have a lot of like these virtual tours of the Beis HaMikdash that you can find online. Interesting stuff. You know, you see all this stuff. You say, okay, the Geula's coming. It's coming soon. You know, we see it's getting more and more in the air. But sometimes we got to take a time out for a little bit to actually remind ourselves of what that means and that we actually want that and we're not satisfied with our life the way that it is now. So B'zer Hashem, we should be able to keep all the halachas and fulfill them all, but at the same time, be able to use the halachas to the next step and be able to really feel, you know, that the emotion behind the mourning is, it's not just action, it's also the emotion and the feeling of yearning for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and yearning for the day that we will see Hashem's hand in the world and feel that we're complete and everything is back here. Okay, thank you. Yashar Koach. Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, everybody.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I'm not sure what happens here.
Oh, here we are.
First, yes, yeah. It's not doing anything. It's white. Before that, there was something on the screen, and now
I returned the book to your closet.
Oh, you did?
I'm not telling you which one, because then you'll be mad if you were looking for it for a long time.
I don't think it was.
I didn't even finish reading it, but I just said I have to give it back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wait, Nikki. You might be interested. Bye. Wait, how do I...